Nature at its best is nature at its simplest. At Red Barn, we've kept it simple for 20 years by concentrating on single-ingredient natural dog treats. Because Mother Nature's actually pretty good at this. Bones are just tasty bones. Meat treats are just nourishing meat. It's nature at its simplest. Look at the label. We want you to. Red Barn Natural Treats. Simply the best. Find it in your local pet specialty store. Try our slow-roasted, natural, meaty bones.
Good morning. Happy
Saturday,
everyone. And it's a pleasure once again to be on Blog Talk Radio with all our listeners and followers. This is Patricia Edwards, and this show is being brought to you this Saturday morning by International Masterminders. We are on www.blogtalkradio.com/masterminders, or you may join us by calling in at 661-554-9219. It's so wonderful that each of you has decided to come to listen this morning, because we have a very, very special show. And our show today is, as it was for the past 3 weeks, all about health. As you know, Ann McNeil, who is the founder of the International Masterminders, she has been a masterminder for over 30 years, is the president. And at the meeting in January, the annual meeting, Ann declared that we were going to be focusing on health. In International Masterminders, we focus on 10 areas, and they include not only health, but family, creativity, education, finance, spirituality, business, family, recreation. And as health is the major focus, the mastermind group of which I am a part, the Women of Balance, which consists of Cheryl Duncan, Alice Fincher, and Isabella Rivers, lovingly known as Izzy, and myself, Patricia Edwards, decided to make health and the spreading of information about health our group goal for the year 2012. Therefore, we have been hosting the Women of Balance, this show on Blog Talk Radio, for the month of March. And we have contributed articles to the IMA newsletter. Now, to learn more about IMA, you may go to www.internationalmasterminders.com. I want to just acknowledge, I think Dr. Hamilton may be on the phone, so I'd like to welcome him while I discuss a little bit about Masterminders, so Dr. Hamilton can be familiar with the group that he has so kindly agreed to speak with on this early Saturday morning after, I'm sure, a very long and tiring week at work, and would love his sleep in on a Saturday morning, but instead he has chosen to be with us, and we're extraordinarily grateful for that. Let me see. Dr. Hamilton, I think, is calling from that 305 number, Stacey.
Okay.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Good morning. Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it is our pleasure, Dr. Hamilton. For our guest this morning, this is Dr. Brian Hamilton. He is a DDS, that's what he puts behind his name. But Dr. Hamilton, I always seem to get your last title incorrect. So would you tell us, you are an oral
maxillofacial surgeon.
Maxillofacial surgeon.
Yes.
And
mm-hmm.
Dr. Hamilton is going to spend practically the whole hour with us this morning. How lucky and fortunate this group of listeners are today. Dr. Hamilton, what I'm going to be doing first is to talk to those people like yourself who are not familiar maybe with masterminding, and to just give a brief background on how this all came to be. In 1937, a gentleman by the name of Napoleon Hill was fortunate enough to know Dale Carnegie. As the community might know, Dale Carnegie was at that time America's richest man, made his money in steel, and wrote the famous book, How to Win Friends and Influence People. And Napoleon Hill went to interview him, and he charged Napoleon Hill with the task of finding out what was the secret for people being wealthy and successful. And to that end, Napoleon Hill interviewed about 500 of what you would call the commanders of industry at that time. And there was a commonality which emerged, and out of that he wrote this definitive work called Think and Grow Rich. Although this book was published 75 years ago, its relevance is almost eerie in that in today's world it is still a practical, unique contribution to people in terms of what they need to do in order to achieve wealth. And Napoleon Hill, this book has sold hundreds of millions of copies. It remains on the best-selling list. And Napoleon Hill found out the secret. And really, the nugget of it is that the secret to great wealth, both personally and financially, is having an idea. And if you look at people like Thomas Edison, they had ideas. And it is not only having the idea, but then putting an action plan and focusing on this, what they call a burning desire, with all your energies and putting it out there into the world and working on it every day and making an affirmation about what is it that you really want. And he goes as far as saying you have to write this down and you have to say it at least twice a day, and you have to do all the work that is required as you read the book in order to make this a reality. I tell the story of my own personal relationship with Think and Grow Rich. I was introduced to Masterminders by my daughter, and then I'd known Anne McNeil, and I couldn't understand her sort of peacefulness and who she was really, because it was an admirable person. And I spoke to her, and she explained about Masterminders to me. And then I visited one of their mid-year meetings and was so inspired that I became a member of International Masterminders here in Miami, Florida, although it's worldwide, but most of the members are concentrated in the United States. And I started to read Think and Grow Rich again. And one of the things that Think and Grow Rich says, you have to decide what it is that you really want. And they call it the six steps to success. And it says, first, fix in your mind the exact amount of money you desire. It is not sufficient merely to say, I want plenty of money. Second, determine exactly what you intend to give in return for the money you desire. And there is no such reality as something for nothing. Third, establish a definite date when you intend to possess the money you desire. And fourth, write out a clear, concise statement of the money you intend to acquire. Name the time limit for its acquisition, state what you intend to give in return for the money, and describe clearly the plan through which you intend to accumulate it. Sixth, read your written statement about it twice a day. Read it aloud, and once before you get up, and once before you go to bed. The instructions given in connection with the six steps will be summarized as, you know, stay in a quiet spot where you'll not be disturbed, close your eyes, and repeat it aloud so that the written statement almost comes alive. In my own situation, as I had told readers before, I had written a book and sold maybe 200, 300 copies. I was not making that my burning desire. I was scattered. And this was, you know, I just gave it half-hearted work. But when I became a masterminder, I followed the plan, and I decided what I wanted to do with this book. And just by following the plan, I sold 20,000 books. And it has just made a huge difference for me. But like many things, we don't stick to it. But if you stick to this plan as outlined in Think and Grow Rich and the philosophies, and you identify what it is that you want more than anything, your burning desire, you have a very good chance of this happening because this has been tried and tested and proved throughout the world. So that is what masterminding is. It requires just two people who have like ideas, who work together in harmony and in respect and support each other and hold each other accountable. If you have more than two people in the group, it's the same, because you want everybody to achieve their goals, but you can only do that through your support and you're holding accountable each other and being of like mind and being respectful within the group. Dr. Hamilton, does that give you an idea of what kind of group you're talking to today?
Yes, it does.
Very good. Okay. So before we continue, let us just remind everyone that you may call in to 661-554-9219, or you may get on your computer at www.blogtalkradio.com / masterminders and listen to the show this morning. Our special guest this morning is Dr. Brian Hugh Hamilton. Dr. Hamilton is a graduate of Binghamton University in upstate New York, where he did his undergraduate work. Then Dr. Hamilton went on to Howard University, where he graduated from the School of Dentistry. Then Dr. Hamilton moved on to Columbia University, Harlem Hospital, where he did his specialty. And Dr. Hamilton currently lives and works in Tampa, Florida, and has been a chief resident and is an excellent member of the dental profession. And we want to welcome and thank him so much once again for being on the radio this morning. Dr. Hamilton.
Yes.
My first question for you is to just briefly explain to our listeners a little bit of what goes in to being a dentist, because you know in this world there are dentists and there are doctors, and I don't know if the public realizes how much the education of a dentist mirrors that of the MD. So would you give us a brief explanation of what it takes to become a dentist?
Well, of course, you have to have your undergraduate degree, and then you move on to dental school, which the first 2 years, like you said, mirror the training of a physician. We do all the same basic science courses. We do the anatomy. We dissect all the cadavers in the first 2 years. We do the physiology and the biochemistry courses. And then the last 2 years of dental school, we move on to our clinical practice where we treat patients and we learn how basically the fundamentals of treating patients. We are treating live patients. The dental treatment at the dental schools is very good because, one, you're being checked by an attending, a professor. The work is being checked at least three times before it can be approved, and then the work is discounted. So that's basically what's involved. The first 2 years is medical training, and then the last 2 years is more clinical practice to prepare you to go to private practice.
Excellent, excellent. So this is a very intense education. Now, on the previous shows, Dr. Hamilton, we talk, as you heard, our emphasis is on health. And when people think about health, they really don't think about dentists, you know, as anything to do with their health. But we have covered a fundamental in health, which is insurance. because it is the third person in the room whenever you make a diagnosis or you, you know, offer a treatment to a patient. There's the patient, the doctor, and the insurance company. And we talk about our health in terms of heart disease briefly, and we talked about cancer, and we talked on the radio also about asthma. Now, from your perspective as a dentist, how does insurance or the lack of it affect the practice of dentistry? And has there been any advocacy on the part of the American Dental Association to get dental insurance included more routinely, as we have seen with medical insurance? And I can repeat it if the question is just too long.
No, it's fine. Well, if you think about it, some people actually visit their dentist more often than they visit their physician. So actually, dental insurance is actually very important, because it's one of the oral health is one of the windows to your actual overall health. And not having dental insurance can basically impede the diagnosis of several conditions, because many systemic conditions first develop in the oral cavity. And of course, my association, American Dental Association, pushes a lot for coverage of people who don't have dental insurance. So they do a lot of work, Give Kids a Smile, and do all the charitable endeavors to ensure that people have access to dental care. But yes, it is a problem, and the Dental Association is aware of it, and they're trying their best to give people dental care as much as possible, but it is a challenge, of course, just like medical coverage is.
Now, you mentioned Give Kids a Smile.
Yes.
Oh, I'd never heard of that organization. We hear of everything else, and we donate money to that. So that is an organization that, that people can make a monetary contribution towards to help children get dental care?
Well, no, it's actually a program. It's an offshoot of the American Dental Association. It's a program from the American Dental Association where they go into communities, they go into schools, they go into clinics, and they set up Give Kids a Smile. That's the name of the program. And they basically provide free oral checks, free cleaning to different communities and their children, just to make sure they are aware that dental health is an important aspect of your overall health.
Great. Fantastic. Stacey, do we have someone on hold? Stacey? Let me see here. I think there's someone here holding at an 813 number.
They have not raised their hand as yet. They're just listening.
Yes, okay. Great. Let's at this point I'll take a break and remind you that you are listening to www.blogtalkradio.com/masterminders. This is brought to you by the International Masterminders, headed by President Ann McNeil. The show today is being hosted by Women of Balance of the International Masterminders Group. And your host today is Patricia Edwards, and on air this morning is our very, very special guest, Dr. Brian Hamilton, oral maxillofacial.
Maxillofacial.
I don't know, that word has just defied.
That's fine.
Surgeon here in the South Florida area, who resides in Tampa and is a graduate of Columbia University Harlem Hospital School of Dentistry. Dr. Hamilton, talk to us a bit of what is the most important thing that we need to know when we are going to choose a dentist. And I understand that oftentimes the choice is narrow, because for most people, their dentist's choice is dictated by the availability of the dental practitioners in the plan. However, there are some plans that you are, you know, at liberty, your PPO plans, to choose your dentist. What is it that, first of all, if we're going to choose just a general dentist, that we should be looking for?
Well, from my experience, most dentists are chosen based on word of mouth from patient to patient to patient. So you always want to get the advice of someone you trust, a family member, a close friend, and just talk to them about their experiences with their dentist. If they're very comfortable with their dentist, then you can give that dentist a try. And then you can do your own research. There are a lot of, there's a lot of information available on every dentist online. You just do a name search, and basically you can also go on the sort of, well, in certain states they have published information about the dentist, whether or not they've been disciplined, whether or not they have any complaints against them. You can all do all that research. And then once you feel comfortable enough, the first appointment is very important. This is where you develop your rapport with your dentist. You sit down, you discuss what your needs are, what he can provide for you, or he or she, sorry, he can provide for you. And then you just go from there. If you're comfortable, you stay. And if not, you just basically choose another one. It's really a personal decision. And like I said, the first thing you do is talk to somebody, a family or friend, who is comfortable with their dentist.
Is there anything you, when you go into the office, that you should maybe be observing in terms of cleanliness, how they take care of instruments, whether they, how they x-ray you? Is there any signs that maybe you should be looking at to know that you are in a safe office, or an office that's following the guidelines, whether they're set down by the American Dental Association or OSHA or what? Is there anything we need to be particularly mindful of?
Right. Well, when you first walk into an office, the first impression usually comes. So just how the front desk approaches you, if the staff is happy, therefore they may want to do a better job. If the staff is more rude and curt, you know that you're not in for basically a very good experience. Everything should be on the dental, the dentist's license should be published on the wall in plain view, so you should be able to see it somewhere that he is, yes, he's licensed within your state. Also, anything to do with any sterilization, you can I'll go back. When you first go into an office, you can always ask for a tour of the office. They should welcome the fact that you'd want to see the office, so you can do a quick tour of the office. They'll tell you exactly where the instruments go, where everything is sterilized. And then you can make a judgment for yourself whether the office is clean, whether or not they just little things, make sure there's nothing on the ground, stuff like that. And then everything should be published on the wall. All the certificates that you need to see, all the licenses and stuff like that should be on the wall. And like I said, just if the general mood and atmosphere of the office is relaxed and a happy one, you'll know that the employees are happy and they tend to want to do a better job then.
Well, you know, I'm really, that nugget that you just left us with is really surprising and amazing to me, and I'm sure to many of our listeners. I never ever thought of asking to get a tour. I only thought when you did real estate, you went and toured the model homes. This is really an excellent, excellent bit of advice. Thank you for that nugget. Now, we were on the question of choosing a dentist, and thank you for that great, great explanation and that golden nugget that you just left us with. But there are other specialties such as yours, and there is a physician, a dentist called an endodontist. Tell us a little bit about why you would go to an endodontist and an oral surgeon, and how would you sort of choose those, or are they referred by a dentist? And just tell us a little bit about who those people are, how you get to them, and what you need to know about them.
All right. So basically, dentistry is broken down in a few, like a tree almost. So at the very top, you have someone, a general dentist. Not necessarily at the top, but he is like your, in comparison, your PCP, your primary care physician, and you have your general dentist, right? And he does pretty much everything. But if the case becomes too involved or too complicated, he may want to refer to different specialties. And different specialties within dentistry, endodontists, they deal with root canals, basically going within the tooth and taking out the nerve and just preserving the tooth while taking out the thing that's causing you the pain, the nerve. You have prosthodontists who do basically dentures and bridges and crowns. You have pediatric dentists who deal mainly with kids. You have periodontists who deal mainly with the diseases of the gums and bones. And you have people who do oral maxillofacial surgery like I do that deal with mainly with the structures of the face, the jaws, the bones of the face. And oral pathology, where if we ever do a biopsy, we send it directly to an oral pathologist who reads the specimen and gives you a diagnosis based on that. So the general dentist basically refers to all these different specialties if he feels that it's beyond the scope of what he is comfortable doing.
So I've learned now that you have a periodontal dentist and you have
a periodontist, yeah.
And you have a dental pathologist.
Right.
Several things I'm learning here today, and I hope our audience is really seeing the value of having Dr. Hamilton on and how important dental health is to us. In the opening, Dr. Hamilton spoke to the fact that the mouth is a window through which many health issues can be identified. And so in the next 30 minutes or so that we have on air, Dr. Hamilton is going to have free rein in terms of talking about not only dental health, but those things that are very important from the dentist's point of view for the community to know, the kinds of questions that you should be asking your dentist. It's not only your medical doctor that you need to ask questions. And also, Dr. Hamilton will be talking about how a dentist can look into your mouth and learn a lot about whether you are somebody with diabetes, oral cancer, and the importance especially of people with heart disease, I think, knowing that their dentist is as important as their cardiologist. So Dr. Hamilton, tell us from your perspective, what is it that you want the community to know before we move into some of these specific diseases that you may discover while examining the oral cavity of a patient?
Well, the general public should definitely be aware that, like I said earlier, the oral cavity is a window to your overall health, and mostly everything enters your body through your mouth. Everything such as pollutants, tobacco, bacteria, viruses, fungi, everything basically enters through the oral cavity. And it's very important that you visit your dental professional on a regular basis because, like I said earlier, you do sometimes visit your dentist more frequently than you visit your physician. So he can pick up on certain diseases earlier than, for instance, a physician who you only see once a year for physical or so. For instance, in my case, I do a blood pressure screening on all my patients at every visit. And very often I have to refer many of my patients to their primary care to check on their blood pressure because they haven't done it in a long time and they have elevated blood pressure readings. And then when they come back to me the next time, they're like, oh, well, thank you, doc, because my primary care now put me on blood pressure medication. And that, in the long run, pretty much prolongs the life of that patient because, as you know, hypertension is basically a silent killer.
That is amazing. Now, do you take the blood pressure just because of your specialty, or is that something dentists would do normally?
Some dentists do it routinely, but I do it because of my specialty. Just because of any surgery that I do, I like to know the vital signs.
Right. Oh, excellent, excellent. So you're saying there that you come to the dentist, they look in your mouth, and there is a window to your health care. Now, one of the diseases, well, one of the things that I see sometimes among the public is that they have all these sort of not flattering conditions in the mouth, such as like black and gray spots, and it's all covered over their teeth. Is that what you call periodontal disease?
Yes, that is a form of, so it could be a form of periodontal disease, yes.
And what are the dangers of having something that the general public can see so much in your mouth? Is that affecting your health, or is it just not nice to look at?
No, it definitely affects your overall health as well because, all right, periodontal disease, otherwise known as periodontitis, is basically a chronic infection or inflammation of the supporting structures of the teeth. Basically involves the gums and the bones. So if you had a chronic, think about it, if you had a chronic infection or inflammation anywhere else on your body, on your hand, on your leg, you'd definitely go to get that treated. But because people can't see it and they're not aware of it, it doesn't hurt most times, they don't necessarily run out to get it treated, but it is an infection, it is an inflammation that should be treated because research has linked it to different cardiovascular diseases, strokes, pneumonia. In pregnant women, they've linked it to preterm deliveries and low birth weight. So periodontitis or periodontal disease is a very significant infection that should be treated. Because, of course, of all the research that has shown that it's linked to different systemic diseases. There's more research that needs to be done, but so far there have been linked to these diseases.
So if you, as a regular person, and you're looking at your teeth every morning when you get up and you start to see changes like that and discoloration and little green or black-looking things developing around your gum line, you ought to head off to the dentist like yesterday.
You should. And what you should be looking for are gums that bleed when you brush or floss. You have red, swollen or tender gums. You have persistent bad breath. You, for instance, have pus between your teeth and gums. You have loose or separating teeth. If you feel a change in your bite, because basically your teeth are moving because they've lost that supporting structure of the bone and gum, or if you wear any type of prosthesis and it's not fitting the way it used to, you may have these are signs that you definitely need to have a checkup with your dentist.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. And it's interesting that you talked about low birth weight and prematurity because in the business that I'm in, they're trying desperately to link this unfortunate increasing phenomenon among women to find out what are some of the things that predispose women to have premature babies, because a premature baby born at 26 weeks costs anywhere from $1.5 to $2 million. And to think if this could be one of the reasons, gosh, a dentist visit could have saved a lot of wear and tear on the parent, the child, and certainly the finances of the country and the community at large. So,
right.
You know, those teeth are very, very important. Are there any medications that people take that they should definitely share with their dentist once they come to see a dentist. Is there anything that is really either life-threatening or potentially catastrophic or at least concerning if you're on certain medications?
Definitely. There are certain medications. So, for instance, a patient being treated for I'll throw one that I come across regularly, atrial fibrillation, where you get, it's basically a heart arrhythmia, and patients tend to be on Coumadin or warfarin, which is a blood thinner, or patients who are taking high doses of aspirin, 325 milligrams. I tend to want to know all of that information because if I do any type of surgery on those patients, they tend to bleed a little bit more, or no, a lot. So I tend to want to do blood tests on those patients because I need to know what the ranges are before I proceed with any surgery because they can bleed. Other medications that can affect some blood pressure medications, if you give them with some of the medications we give, like the local anesthetic, it has epinephrine. And if you give epinephrine on top of some of those blood pressure medications, it can cause problems with your heart. Other medications I would like to know, like I said, different blood pressure medications, different medications that you take for, blood pressure medications can cause dry mouth. Yeah,
what
go ahead.
Steroids, Dr. Hamilton? A lot of people are on steroids, people with pulmonary illnesses. Is that an issue that you want, a medication that you want to let your doctor know about?
Of course, yes. Right. If you are asthmatic, you definitely want to let your doctor know because they'll be working in your mouth. There will be a lot of secretions. There will be a lot of irritations to the airway that can trigger an asthma attack. And if you need to have your inhaler with you, in some cases, a dentist will have you put your inhaler on the bracket table. So just in case you have an asthma attack, it's in easy access. You can just reach over, get it, and you can take a couple puffs of your medication to prevent or ward off any attacks.
Dr. Hamilton, you've been a real nugget here of wonderful information. I mean, I did not know that either about the asthmatic, and I'm sure our community of listeners didn't know about it. I advise all of the people who are on the show listening to do their Twitter and their Facebook to listen to Dr. Hamilton because he is really giving us some great insight and information on managing our dental health right along with our medical health. This leads us right into what we were talking about, Dr. Hamilton, because you answered, I guess, one of the questions. Our last show, we did asthma, and what Dr. Hamilton has said here, we talked about triggers on the last show, and we talked about, you know, the usual things such as mites and smoke and perfumes and the smell
right.
of new cars and things like that. But here he is telling us that there are certain medications, your anesthetic that you get, and that can, along with your having asthma and all the secretions that you have, just cause the irritation and the inflammation which set up the asthma attack right there in the dentist's office. So it's important to share your medical condition with the dentist.
Pat, this is Stacy. We do have a caller that has a question. Can I pull them in?
Surely.
Go ahead, caller.
Hi. I have fillings that I've had since I've been a teenager, so that means they've been in my mouth some 40 years now. They're black, where they started off being silver, and I seem to be the only one concerned about that. Is there a reason to be concerned? Could it be some kind of leakage or something that's getting into my system?
No, not really. Those amalgam, although there's been a lot of press about the amalgam fillings, they have a long track record of safety. And, yes, that does happen over time. They do tend to change a little bit with corrosion, a little bit of corrosion, that they tend to change color. But if your dentist is looking at them and he doesn't see any cracks around the edges or any potential areas where saliva or bacteria or plaque can get into the tooth structure, then you shouldn't necessarily be too concerned. What would be of concern is going to someone who, if the fillings are fine and they just want to change them for cosmetic reasons, that's not necessarily the best thing to do. I mean, drilling into a tooth is going to cause trauma. You may have pain and discomfort after that. And those white fillings can eventually leak as well. So if the fillings are fine now and they're not causing any discomfort or pain, and if you're happy with the cosmetic aspect of it, then they're fine. There shouldn't be a problem.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you so much, caller. I think I recognize that voice. I think that's Cheryl from our group, Women of Balance. Thank you very much. Dr. Hamilton, you mentioned something that is, again, about medications, about aspirin. So many people in the United States and throughout the world take aspirin for heart disease. And some people just take it because they think it's good and it will prevent all kinds of things from happening to them. So you would caution all these folk to not just think of it as just an innocuous drug, but to also let your dentist know. Is that correct?
Yes. So definitely let your dentist know you're taking aspirin. It's really the dosage that matters to him, though. If you're taking the baby aspirin, it's not as significant. You can do surgical procedures with baby aspirin on board. However, it's the 325, the more potent anticoagulant, the blood-thinning aspirin, that may be a cause of concern because it can prolong bleeding in certain cases. But for regular fillings and just cleanings and different things, the aspirin shouldn't be of concern. But if you're doing any deep cleanings, any surgical procedures of any sort, you'll tell your physician or your dentist that you're on the aspirin 325. Yes.
There are people like myself who don't do very well with epinephrine. So whatever allergies that you have or medical conditions, you need to tell your dentist, because when I go to the dentist, I don't get an anesthetic that has epinephrine. And dentists can always tailor your medical needs to your dental needs. Is that not correct? Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct. Yeah, you do have local anesthetics without epinephrine in it that won't cause the palpitations, the sensitivity to the epinephrine.
Excellent. We're going to remind everyone that you're listening to www.blogtalkradio.com/masterminders, brought to you each Saturday morning by International Masterminders. You can learn more about International Masterminders by going to www.internationalmasterminders.com. Each year, twice a year, the International Masterminders meet in Miami, and you can learn about those meeting places and the date and the time for these conferences by visiting the website www.internationalmasterminders.com. This morning we have on air with us Dr. Brian Hamilton, a dental surgeon, and you may speak to Dr. Hamilton and ask him questions. This is a great opportunity at 601-854-9219. Or you may call your computer, or they say log into that computer at www.blogtalkradio.com/masterminders. Tweet those friends and have them tune in to listen to Dr. Hamilton. He is providing invaluable information that we are getting absolutely free without paying a deductible and paying a copay this morning. Thank you, Dr. Hamilton, for being on the show.
No problem.
Talk to us a bit about health. The topics we had discussed were, as I said, heart and cancer and asthma, and you talked about asthma, and we are really grateful for that information. Talk to us about what you find about people who have heart disease and dentistry. And what other diseases do you pick up from looking into the oral cavity? and the show is all yours.
Well, the most common thing I see is periodontal disease and diabetes. A person who's diabetic, more than likely, in most cases, they have some form of periodontal disease. And the reason is that a person who's diabetic has, their immune system is not as strong as, for instance, somebody who does not have diabetes. So their resistance to periodontal disease is much lower. So you'll notice somebody who is diabetic, their gums tend to be very red, inflamed, and they tend to come in usually with some sort of loose teeth. And so a person who is diabetic should definitely try to control that as much as possible to limit the effects of periodontal disease. Other things that I noticed, a person who tends not to take care or much care of their mouth, this is basically anecdotal. There's no research to go supporting them. But somebody who doesn't necessarily take the time to take care of their mouth, doesn't necessarily take the time to take care of their overall health. So somebody who's I see a lot of cavities, decay, periodontal, they generally have a lot of other diseases. And it may play into the fact that, one, they have the other diseases and can't necessarily pay as much attention to taking care of their mouth. But it almost goes hand in hand. Somebody who has a lot of systemic diseases doesn't necessarily take the time to take care of the oral cavity. But if you improve your oral health, you can improve your systemic conditions, because you'll be able to feed yourself. You'll be able to just take in the nutrients that you need to ward off some of these systemic diseases as well. So it does play a major role, taking care of your oral cavity or your mouth.
Doctor, this is Stacey Silvera, and I have a quick question for you. I know that your specialty has to do with the replacement of missing teeth, I guess. And
sure.
Can you address those persons that are walking around with teeth that are no longer in their mouth? They don't want to go and get a partial or false teeth or whatever. Can you talk to us a little bit about what it is that you do, your specialty? Because I think it is coming to the forefront a little more now than it was in the past.
Right. Missing teeth, of course, affects your chewing efficiency and affects how well you take in nutrients and well you nourish yourself. And what my specialty does, oral maxillofacial surgery, and some others as well, we can place what we call implants. And implants are basically titanium roots or titanium posts that go inside the bone. They heal and integrate and become a part of the bone. And one, you can replace single teeth with implants, or you can replace the whole arch with implants, or you can place implants in strategic locations in the mouth and then eventually put a denture on top of that, and that can restore the dentition and therefore increase your chewing efficiency. So, yes, there are different ways to replace those missing teeth. It doesn't necessarily have to be implants. Your general dentist can talk to you about getting bridges or dentures or different things to replace those missing spaces. But you should always want to replace these teeth, because when you're just using your gums to chew food, you're not chewing it as well as you should. You're swallowing it almost whole. Your digestive system can't necessarily handle that bolus in such a large way. So you definitely want to replace those teeth as soon as possible.
Thank you.
No problem.
When you go to the dentist, one of the things they look at is your cavity for oral cancer and their examinations. Why are they feeling up your neck and pulling the side of your jaw out? What is all that about?
Well, they're checking because, of course, cancer can involve the lymph nodes. So when they're checking your neck, they're checking for any enlargements of the lymph nodes, they're checking to make sure inside, they're checking the inside to make sure you don't have any sores or ulcers, because those are generally signs of oral cancer, especially on the floor of the mouth, the side of the tongue, on the lips. If you have anything, any sores that won't heal, or if it's been over 2 weeks, usually anything, any injury to the mouth will heal within 2 weeks. If it's been over 2 weeks, you're definitely a candidate for a biopsy, just to check and to send it to the oral pathologist to come back with a diagnosis, because it could be something more serious. So that's why
Pat, we have several questions on the line. I'm going to open up the first caller. Caller, please go ahead.
Hello?
Hello. Go ahead.
Okay, yes. This call is for Dr. Hamilton. I am a family physician, and I want to go back to the question of diabetes and oral health.
Sure.
I would like if you could address for me if there's any correlation between the level of sugar control and oral health in someone who has good oral health, someone who goes to the dentist and take care. You mentioned about the gums look red and stuff like that. And I'm wondering if there's really a correlation between hemoglobin A1C level and oral health. And the reason I'm asking you that is because let me put it this way, used to think that the lower your hemoglobin A1C, it's the better it is for heart disease control and kidney disease control and eye disease control and so on. But recently, some articles have come out to say that doesn't seem as if sugar control is so much important in heart disease. And I'm wondering if the same thing happens in oral health, if you have any kind of recent studies and so on to show that. And because we're now saying that, for instance, heart attack occurrence in diabetics, that's a lot more common, is mainly because of probably an inflammatory process in the plaques in our arteries, and that the inflammation causes softening of the plaques, and because of that, the plaques get dislodged and cause a heart attack and so on. And recent studies have shown that statins can be used as anti-inflammatory agents, and because of that, they may stabilize a clot and prevent a heart attack. And the reason I'm going into all this rigmarole with you is that I wonder, the inflammatory process you're talking about that happens in the gum, is it mainly an infective inflammatory process, or is it just basic inflammation? And if that is the case, if statins would be of value in preventing some of those periodontal inflammation, in quotes.
Right. 7 minutes and two callers.
No problem. Well, as of right now, I'm not aware of any studies that correlate the hemoglobin A1C levels to any oral health condition. I'm sure they're doing those studies right now. They have come up with a link of the infective inflammatory process between periodontal health and cardiovascular health. So there is definitely a loose link right there, because it is, of course, the same cytokines that are involved in that inflammatory process that cause the dislocation of those plaques and stuff like that in periodontal disease. So, yes, there is somewhat of a link there. Whether or not statins would be helpful or not, I'm sure there's research going on right now to determine that. But as of right now, I'm not aware of any studies that show any correlation between the statins and the periodontal health.
Right. Because, as a matter of fact, we are now at the point where if we think someone is going to become diabetic later on, for instance, they are what we identify as having the metabolic syndrome, we are now starting them on statins even before they become diabetics, just to prevent that inflammatory process that happens in plaques. Why I'm asking you to is just that may well help our gums too. You've seen doing things like that, because I'm not sure if the periodontal issues you see in diabetes is always an infective process and not just an inflammatory process.
True.
Yes, and so on. Anyway, I'm enjoying your program. This is Olive Chung James. I don't know if you recall who I am.
I do.
Yes, and I'm really enjoying it. And kudos to you, Miss and Patsy.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yes, okay.
All right. And we didn't plan this. Chase, do you have another caller?
Actually, they hung up. We lost them.
That's an excellent discussion. And I think it shows the real mix between dentistry and medicine and the primary care physician and the dentist. Dr. Hamilton, before we go, we have to discuss the whole question of bad breath and dry mouth.
Right.
Things that plague many people. And what do you do about bad breath? As a dentist, I mean, people go to the dentist often and yet they still have bad breath. I mean, what's happening there? What should we do? Do we ask the dentist if we have bad breath? What happened? How do we take care of this problem?
Well, usually the root of bad breath is, once again, the gum disease, periodontal disease. There are some systemic conditions, of course, that can cause bad breath or halitosis or... And so, for instance, once again, if you're a diabetic and you have somewhat of a fruity smell on breath, so if you've been to the dentist several times, you think you've controlled your gum disease, if you think you've done all the cleanings possible, you may want to consider getting just a referral or just ask your primary care, well, why do you think I'm having, because it could be a digestive gastrointestinal issue or something other than just your oral cavity. But, yes, the root mostly of bad breath usually involves gum disease. Also, a lot of people neglect to brush their tongue, which harbors a lot of bacteria as well. So every time you brush your teeth twice a day, just brush your tongue as well. Scrape the tongue, get all of that. Just because the tongue has a lot of crevices and stuff like that need to be cleaned as well. And every time you eat, if you want, just rinse out really well with a certain mouthwash. In terms of the dry mouth, once again, a lot of systemic conditions can cause dry mouth. A lot of the medications that you take can cause dry mouth as well. So these are things that if you find that you're having and you can't work them out with your dentist, you may have to consult your primary care just to consider changing your medication so you don't necessarily have the effect of the dry mouth as well. But, yes, it can also be a systemic condition that's causing the dry mouth.
And, Dr. Hamilton, I'm sure you are an advocate who want to leave us with the whole idea that we must floss, and floss some more.
Yes.
Or is there any danger to over-flossing?
Excuse me?
Is there any danger to – can you over-floss?
It's generally recommended only doing it once a day. And, yes, if you tend to do it once a day, but you do it aggressively where you're cutting and ripping the soft tissue of the mouth, no, that's obviously not recommended.
Well, I can't thank you enough for being on this show. You have provided this community this morning with some of the most valuable insight. And I think after hearing you, I can't think of anybody who would be uncomfortable in going to the dentist. But I also can't think of anybody who's listened to this show who has become highly educated and has not gotten great insight into what they need to do as consumers of dental care. I want to thank Dr. Olive for having called in. I want to remind everybody that this wonderful show was made possible by www.internationalmasterminders.com, and that you have been listening this morning to Dr. Brian Hamilton, a dentist here in the South Florida area, located in Tampa. And Dr. Brian Hamilton, you are an oral
maxillofacial surgeon.
Maxillofacial surgeon, Columbia Hospital, Harlem University. It's been, Columbia University, Harlem Hospital. And
no problem.
It's been our great pleasure to have had you on the show this morning. Stacey,
thank you
for working the telephones. And from the Women of Balance, we want to thank you again for joining us this Saturday morning. Bye-bye from International Masterminders, blogtalkradio.com/masterminders. Talk to you next Saturday. Bye-bye.
Okay, let's do this. Jog 3 miles before breakfast. Make it to work by 9. Run out for a salad at lunch. Oh, time to own that meeting at 3. Yes, 10,000 steps. What's next?
Fearless is not hitting snooze. That's the power of the Blue Cross and Blue Shield Federal Employee Program. With more healthy benefits and tools, no one does more to help you live fearless. Sign up at fepblue.org/action by December 14th.